As you know, the international legal order has really served us very well, and in fact, Singapore has benefited from this order. But you mentioned as well that it's now at risk, and it is at risk by certain unilateral actions. Some alarming developments have happened since January 3rd, and there are now threats going around targeting different territories. I'd like to know what defenses do we have as small states, not just Singapore. I think right now there are only two major powers in the world, maybe three if you include Russia. The rest of us are at risk. So what defenses do we have to mitigate these risks, to preserve our sovereignty and our way of life? And the second one is that you said the US-China relationship is important for Southeast Asia. Our institute has done a survey called the State of Southeast Asia every year, in which we realize that people actually don't want to choose. And we've always said that ASEAN does not want to choose. You also mentioned that China has made the right statements, and indeed, following January 3rd, China has made the strongest statement in support of the international rules-based order. Does this mean that we have now reached a point, in order to preserve our own sovereignty, that we now must choose a side? Those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Well, what can we do to keep ourselves safe? First, make sure that the country economy is successful, because if you're broke and poor, poor or broke, you can't do anything about it. Secondly, look to our defences. We've been spending about 3% of our GDP every year on defence for a very long time, previously even higher, and built up a credible SAF, Singapore Armed Forces. And we continue to do that, not to threaten anybody, but just to keep ourselves safe. Thirdly, work together with our regional neighbours, cooperating amongst ourselves to the extent that we can, and also using it as a platform to partner other economies and other centres of prosperity in the world, whether it's India, whether it's China, whether it's EU, ASEAN, EU, ASEAN, India. These are all ties which we can cultivate in order, even if I don't have a full WTO system, I have got a network of countries which want to trade with one another and continue to want to do business under some set of rules which will prevent us from falling back to the law of the jungle. And it's not only within ASEAN. We can do that using APEC or using the RCEP and actively encourage this to happen. And we participate very actively when it comes to climate change conferences, when it comes even now to WTO discussions, or the UN through the Forum of Small States, FOSS, where we are an active organizer, promoter, to work together, because small states have agency. I don't determine the outcome, but I have influence over my fate. Now, on the question of people not wanting to choose sides, I think in any country, unless you're on the verge of unless your dander is up and there's some fight and you've decided, let's charge and go and clobber the other fellow. Most of the time, when you ask people who are living in peace and quiet, do you want a fight? Do you want to get involved in somebody else's fight? I think most people will say, no, we don't want to do that. It's a completely rational and understandable sentiment. And speaking as a government of the country, if there's a fight between two other countries, we have to ask ourselves, what's in it for us? Is there a principle at stake? If so, we have to stand up for the principle. We don't support military intervention in a certain country, but that doesn't mean I'm the enemy of the country which I disapprove of, whose action I disapprove of. I still do business with them. I mean, we issued very strong statements in the case of when Russia invaded Ukraine. We had sanctions against Russia, certain targeted sanctions, but doesn't mean we are hostile to Russia. I mean, we still have relations, we still do business with them. Similarly with the US, similarly with other powers. Now, on US and China, everybody says they don't want you to, they're not asking you to choose sides. Everybody would like you on their side without choosing. And sometimes they make it quite clear that this is their wish. And you have to find a way to do business with both of them and not to be closed off from one side or the other. Some, if you read the reports, it's open reports, nothing from intelligence sources, you will see that when the U.S. concludes trade deals with certain other partners, I mean, in the reports recently were Malaysia, Vietnam, Indonesia, but even from the first Trump administration in the U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement, there are provisions to say if you enter into an agreement with a country which doesn't subscribe to U.S. principles or which is a problem to the U.S., well, this deal is off. It's called a poison pill. So there is pressure to enlist countries onto their side. I think we have to do our best to resist that. And the more we have links with all parties, I think the more we are in a position to say, well, I have some options. I don't have to be pushed in completely into following one side and not the other. Frankly speaking, countries in the region, in Asia Pacific, including America's allies and America's friends, all have very big accounts with China. It's so for Japan, it's so for Korea, it's so for Australia. The Korean president has just been in Beijing and trying to reset their relationship, which used to be very good until about a decade ago when Korea decided to host the THAAD system. And then it turns out, they still want to do business with China. Australia wants to do business with China. They sell many, many things there. So does Japan, even though there are tensions between them. So this is a situation which many countries in the world will be in, and I do not think that the outcome will be that we are going to have a completely lopsided world in which one party will be alone and all the other countries will be on one side. It's not credible.